Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us with Meet Me at the Diner with your host, Ann Eller. Today we have J.J. Darby with the NFIB. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. I'm Ann Eller. Yes, we've been talking about this one. I've already had a few fireworks going on over here. I've got J.J. Darby here. He is NFIB, which is the National Federation of Independent Business People. Are there any left in the state?
One or two. Yes, ma'am.
Actually, it's a pretty big organization, isn't it, JJ?
It is. We represent about 5,000 businesses here in South Carolina.
And we need more small businesses here in South Carolina.
We absolutely do.
And one of the things we're going to be talking about today is some of the issues. He's a lobbyist, that's right, right here in the state. He writes a lot of great articles throughout the state in a lot of papers. You may have seen some of his articles. We are very fortunate to have him sitting across the table from me today because we're talking about NFIB, lobbying for things that are important. It is a more conservative view, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. You look at small businesses across the state, and you know that there are certain things that they want and they need out of the State House and out of Washington, and that's what we do.
That's what we do. Okay, well, we're going to be talking about it. We're members here, Sharp Facets and WLMA, and Clara was coming around here and got us all involved. She's been working Greenwood, talking to a lot of people, and a lot of people have been interested about what you have to say. But where did you grow up?
I grew up right outside of Washington, D.C. in Bethesda, Maryland. Came down here to go to Carolina, University of South Carolina.
Why did you come here?
Good business program, good language program, and ended up staying. Married a Carolina girl, and I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I've been here since then.
Well, when you were growing up, though, J.J., what did you want to be? When you came down here and, you know, when you were thinking the future?
Well, I don't necessarily think that in 87 when I first came down to Carolina that I was thinking about lobbying per se, but definitely had the entrepreneurial spirit, you know, did the things where I mowed grasses over the summers and worked at car dealerships to make money, and always was interested and fascinated with business. So when the opportunity presented itself to come to USC and do my undergrad work here and then maybe go into grad school here, they had a great international business program here that I was interested in.
Did you think you were going to become a big entrepreneurial person and travel overseas and do this type of thing? Or when you were 15, were you thinking of becoming a doctor or a lawyer? A lawyer, here we go.
No, probably not a lawyer. Law school was never really in the cards for me. I think it was always going to be something along the lines of business school and maybe an MBA or something along those lines. My family's all been involved in business. My dad was a stockbroker. My mom was a real estate agent. And so law school wasn't probably in the cards for me, or for that matter, medical school, because I probably couldn't put in a stitch if I needed to.
Okay. All right. So a business person. Well, you know, I think that's terrific. So then you ended up staying here. And at one point, you actually worked for Governor Mark Sanford.
I did.
What exactly did you do for him?
I was the director of boards and commissions for the first year of his administration. So immediately after inauguration, through the end of that year, I was responsible for the political appointments to the several hundred boards and commissions there are across the state that the governor's responsible for naming names for and running them through the Senate in some cases as well. And did that for about a year for the governor.
Well, now you also worked on his election, didn't you?
I was actually involved in another campaign. Okay. that wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. During that election cycle, that primary. And then when he became the nominee, Republicans across the state, and I was involved with the Republican candidate at the time, all helped and supported him to become elected back in 2002.
All right. Well, it's been an interesting turn of events for our governor. He certainly has put South Carolina on the map. If we were running below the radar, we're definitely out there, not only from taking the stimulus package, which eventually we did, but also his little escapades to Argentina.
Yes, one of the great things about NFIB is we have folks that do the same thing that I do in all 50 states. And I've heard from a number of folks in other states, and I'll get more copies of articles back to me from within South Carolina than I get sent out from South Carolina.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. I've tried to figure out whether our governor just likes being on the front page of the paper, just for conversation. It's hard to know because he certainly has been there. Do you think that he can be effective for the time that's remaining?
You know, I think he's making a good faith effort to be so. I think when you see the recent announcement, say in Charleston about Boeing, there were a number of folks who were at the table kind of helping to work that through. I know that the governor's Commerce Secretary Joe Taylor and the Commerce Department were very actively involved in that. In a situation like that where there's a game changer like a Boeing,
that was big.
It's very big. There's a lot of credit to go around. I think that the legislature really stepped up and. Glenn McConnell and Hugh Leatherman and Harvey Peeler and all the folks in the Senate and the Speaker and the folks in the House really stepped up and were very responsive to Boeing's needs. And I think collectively we've all done a lot to help with the soil conditions here to kind of make it in some ways more attractive for a Boeing to come here than obviously what they were looking at in Washington.
Yes, I mean, I agree. And I think it is good to see. I think we need more of that type of activity mm-hmm. to bring jobs back. I mean, we were so badly hurt by NAFTA.
Sure, absolutely.
And you know, I still, when I look back at NAFTA and they said that it wouldn't change things and it wouldn't hurt, it's hurt South Carolina a lot and any manufacturing facility or state.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now we are doing some things here in South Carolina that are causing heads to turn, that are making industry look to South Carolina, and those are encouraging things. I mean, I think there's good news on the horizon in a lot of ways. There's good news just today, I think, in Greenwood. I think Fuji has agreed to expand some operations here.
They're actually bringing their recycling back here to Greenwood instead of keeping it in Mexico.
Right.
Absolutely. That was good news.
That's good news, too. And along with conversations like those where larger manufacturers and industries do that, that helps small business in the surrounding communities, too. And that's what I'm excited about. I know that something like that will certainly help the small businesses here in Greenwood, and that something like Boeing will help all of North Charleston and all of Charleston and small businesses there, too.
Well, it's all the residual businesses that
That's
have
right.
to support the one business. And sometimes we don't take all those businesses into account.
That's right.
It's like when BMW came. It's all the parts and all the other things that help make this a big, big, big business for South Carolina.
Absolutely. I've got members in Charleston who are very excited about what something like Boeing, as an example, will do for the Charleston community and their businesses. So that's a very good example.
That's right. Hey, we're going to be talking more about all the things that you want to hear about. That's right. If you're interested in healthcare, we've got something to talk about. A cap and trade, hey, that's a big one for me. We're going to talk some about that. And also coming up, other things that you'd like to talk about. How about unions in South Carolina? Would you like to see that? Hey, I think you're going to want to hear what J.J. Darby has to say about it. So don't you go away. This is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood in the Lakelands News Talk radio station. Got a call for JJ? Don't hesitate to call 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
That's right. NFIB, the voice of small business. And I have J.J. Darby here, the voice of small business. From a lobbyist point of view, folks, that's right. He's in charge of all the lobbying that goes on here in South Carolina, trying to make sure that the voice of small business is not lost. And I think that's really important. One thing I want to address before we talk about some of those issues, but the elections yesterday, mm-hmm. two new Republican governors. What do you think that signals to President Obama, to the Democratic side? What do you think that, or does it indicate anything? Because Robert Gibbs was saying yesterday it didn't really matter.
Well, I respectfully disagree. With all due respect, I'm an old campaign guy. That's what I did prior to my time with NFIB. And one of the things that you do and one of the things that you spend time looking at after the elections is who actually voted. And all indications are that that in the two races that we're talking about here, the independents broke with the president. They originally had voted with Obama, saying Virginia and in New Jersey, and they didn't do that yesterday. And I think that that's indicative of what concerns the independents that the regular voter has about things that are going on in Washington. I mean, there are some really large issues being discussed in Washington that are going to have huge pocketbook impacts for small businesses here, businesses across the country, families in general. And I think that what they saw yesterday, or I hope what they saw yesterday, might be a bit of a wake-up call to them on some of these policies.
You know, that's one of the things we've seen, you know, with our new president and the way things have been coming together. We seem to think that we can spend our way out of this. I mean, we keep seeing more and more money spent, and yet they look at the small business person as where to get the money from.
Right.
Unfortunately, I've never made the big dollars that the government seems to think that I'm making out here.
Right.
And right now, I'm doing triple jobs, mm-hmm. just trying to keep up and keep things going. Do you think that they're going to get the message, and do you think we're ever going to see any support or help for small business?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that is unique about NFIB is, in addition to having a presence in all 50 states and at the state houses, we also are very active and aggressive in our efforts in Washington. And we've been trying to work with this administration in order to promote small business and the needs of small business. Now, when you look at some of the things that the administration is advancing and that the Democrats, you know, Speaker Pelosi, Reid, and the others are promoting, it kind of makes you scratch your head as to whether or not they're listening to us a little bit. But the reality of it is that we're doing what we can in order to make sure that they do hear us, and at minimum, as they go forward with some of these things that they feel like they're beholden to folks and owe folks, that they'll do what they can to do us no harm. The problem with it is some of these issues are going to do us harm, period. And that's why I'm here. That's why I have peers in 49 other states that are doing what they do, and that's why we're in Washington, is to, particularly in this situation, when you look at, say, healthcare or card check, you show the administration and you show your members that small businesses can be dramatically impacted by these decisions and these policies. And if you don't take that into account, you're going to do things like increase unemployment and tax small businesses out of existence. And that's nothing anybody should be
for. What would the future be? What would the future be if we destroyed small business and we didn't have small business and we just had a government entity that provided all the jobs and that was it? I mean, you know, where would we be?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in the entrepreneurial spirit, and I think that
I was too, till I got clobbered.
Well, you know, and there's a clobbering going on every day in Washington, unfortunately, and I think that's what groups like NFIB are for, is to draw the line and say, you're getting ready to suck the wind out of the sails of the...
Can we recover without small business?
No, you absolutely can't. In South Carolina, NFIB represents small businesses, the majority of which have less than 25 employees. You know, small businesses make up over 90% of the employers in South Carolina, and we employ over 50% of the people that work in the state. You know, without that, you know, where's your workforce go every day to get a paycheck? You know, where do those business
state house?
Go? Well, they can become a lobbyist.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And you know, the problem that we're seeing is that they're not giving anything that says, hey, and I don't think that small business really wants a handout. I don't really think they want a handout. They just want to do what they do, and that's make money and let some of these reins that are constricting us let go.
No, you're right. And look at healthcare as a perfectly good example. You know, NFIB has been advocating for years and years on behalf of our members and their concerns they have about healthcare. It's been the number one issue that's been balloted for NFIB, and we ballot our members every year for the last several years. And as a result of that, we've been advocating for things like opening up the marketplaces, small business tax credits, things that would bring competition to the insurance market, that would make it easier for folks that have to buy in the individual and small group market to get reasonable product at a reasonable price. And what you see coming out of Washington right now is essentially the opposite.
It's like my partner and I in the morning, we've been advocating for a long time, just if they had done away with the FICA tax and the withholding tax mm-hmm. for 6 months a year, mm-hmm. give businesses the opportunity to retool and bring the money back in, mm-hmm. and would we have had to bail out Chrysler and some of these others, if they hadn't had all these taxes and all this
suspending
stuff?
Suspending that would have probably been a really good idea. But that was not something that I don't think this administration is into suspending any sort of tax. So
they're into maybe creating more taxes.
Creating some more. I mean, particularly, you know, when you look at this health care program that Speaker Pelosi's just started shopping around this week. You know, there's a number of proposals up there, but the one that's being talked about right now is the one that Speaker Pelosi's been moving in the House. That, at minimum, is going to cause things. We identified at least 15 problems with that bill on behalf of small business. You know, from the mandated coverage to the payroll tax to the increased administrative burden that small businesses are going to have to take on in order to prove that they're covering. To prove that they're giving adequate insurance under whatever that bureaucrat's going to determine to be adequate.
Well, it's probably not going to pass before the end of the year. Right?
Reid said yesterday that there is probably that there's a chance that it may not happen before the year is over.
Right.
And that puts it into next year with the midterms, and so that could change the landscape pretty dramatically. But you got to believe that they're going to go to their comfort, and their comfort is to try and push this bill. I mean, that Pelosi wants this. She's told her leaders that, and the president wants it. So you've got to believe that they're going to continue to push very hard for it, which is why we're going to continue to try to draw a line in the sand and say no more.
Do you think that with the elections that happened yesterday, that that's going to maybe temper, or maybe some of the Democrats, the blue dogs in there, are going to say, well, maybe if I want to go back to Washington.
It sure makes it easier for them to make the argument to the administration, to the leadership in the House and the Senate, that what they're trying to push here could cause them political damage. Up until now, they've been saying, we're going to ask our members to dig in and take those hard votes and go against their constituencies that they heard at in all these healthcare rallies. But now, after that election yesterday, you got to believe that some of those blue dogs, as an example, are going to feel emboldened to defect, to survive politically. They're going to have to.
Yeah, and there's not any of them up there that are just there for a 2-year term and don't want to go back, are there?
Not that I'm aware of.
It'd be an interesting idea if we didn't let them go back all the time, right?
That would be an interesting idea, too. There's two or three of them that I can think of that I'd like to have not go back, but that's not going to happen anytime real soon, I don't think.
Okay, so we better stay with reality. Can I ask you, why haven't we gone with more tort reform and cost in the – this is insurance. Why
Sure.
haven't we gone into that subject rather than, oh, we need national health care? Because I tell you what, if I could pay the prices that insurance pay for all the things that I have had to pay for over the years, mm-hmm. I could afford to do it practically
Sure.
pretty much out of pocket.
Sure. Well, yeah. Interestingly enough, there's been – to hear Joe Wilson, who's a good friend and a congressman from here that got a lot of notoriety just recently. There have been a number of proposals that conservatives have brought up in Washington that included things like tort reform, looking at medical
Even though they're all lawyers up there. Yeah.
Well, but one or two of them have come up with some good ideas. And they've been promoting those, and they've been falling on deaf ears. The conventional wisdom is that the administration, that the leadership is just not interested in advancing that the trial bar has been very supportive of the administration and of the Democrat leadership, and so they're not going to advance any meaningful tort reform on that level.
So are you telling me that those with the biggest voices and the most amount of money are the ones that might be controlling what's happening?
It's possible. It's possible, particularly in the area of tort reform. We continue to work on tort reform here in South Carolina, and have had some success at the State House in passing, limits on medical mal. We made some changes to workers' comp a few years ago, and continue to push for a comprehensive tort reform package. Even this coming session, we'll be doing that. And so that's an ongoing conversation that we have with leadership every year at the State House.
So
the business community, the medical community, the providers, everyone together is working towards meaningful tort reform. If you bring predictability and some stability to the judicial system and in the awards and some of these other things, you'll actually find that the climate's better, and industry and businesses will find this to be a better place for them to grow.
Just out of curiosity, throughout the United States, is there any place where tort reform has succeeded? Any of the states?
There are a variety of different. Yes. For instance, in I believe it's Texas, they passed some fairly dramatic changes to their system, and someone told me a statistic the other day that I had trouble believing, but it may be true that in a period of, I believe it might have been a year or 2 years, Texas Texas actually grew more jobs than the rest of the country did as a result of some of
the
some of the incentives that they passed. Now, they did some other things too with taxes and some other things, but one of the driving factors that made Texas attractive is some of the things that they did on the tort level.
There you go. Hey, don't go away. It's going to get more interesting because we're going to talk about a whole lot more that has to do with South Carolina and the United States. So don't go away. This is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood in the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station. Give us a call, 229-7984.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station.
Well, that's right, he's a lobbyist, folks, but he's out there trying to make sure that our words are heard. Anybody that's in a small business... Well, where do you draw the line between what's small and what's big, just out of curiosity, JJ?
The majority of our members have less than 50, 25 employees, but we do have some businesses that have over 100.
That's right. So, and actually, how long has NFIB been in existence?
Since the 40s, and it's grown since then to a presence in every state, as well as Washington.
That's right. It is the thing that has made America grow and grow and grow, small businesses. And right now, kind of, I personally feel that our government is looking right over us and just looking at how much more can you pay, you know? And I think the other thing that is a problem is I don't believe that any small business is going to go out there and say, let me hire another person until we have the health care issue, because people don't know what's coming down the pike. And, you know, other issues, too. I mean, why would you invest when you don't know where it's going? Do you hear that?
I do. I hear from our businesses every day about access to capital, about concerns that they have about keeping the lights on with some of the stuff coming down from Washington. And they find some comfort knowing that NFIB's got boots on the ground in Washington that are trying to get their voices heard in Washington. And they have some comfort knowing that we're working as hard as we can at the State House to get some things done for them here in South Carolina as well.
So cap and trade, you know, that's one I think, you know, when you listen to it and you hear cap and trade, you really don't know what it's all about.
Right. It sounds fairly innocuous. Yes, it does. It really does.
But it's actually one of the very scarier things that are out there for our country.
That's right. You know, the two or three proposals that are actually on paper right now, and there's a lot of hypotheticals out there right now, but the two or three proposals that are on paper right now that are being moved around are pretty damaging to business, to small business, to Main Street, and to the families that'll be impacted by that kind of a tax. You know, there's an estimate.
They always pass things along, don't they?
That's what happens in a cap and trade scenario. You know, you look at the folks who, in fact, are going to be carbon emitters, who are going to be paying, and then they're going to have to pass that tax on, and that tax is going to make it down to Main Street and to my members, and then they're going to have to make decisions about whether or not they can afford to stay in business and hire as a result of that big tax.
Let me ask you a question. This is totally off the subject. Does that mean eating beans will be out for all Americans? I just happened to think about that. You said they're going to be taxing this.
You're right. Well, greenhouse emissions, right?
Exactly. All right. But anyways, to talk about cap and trade, Lindsey Graham has come under a lot of fire here.
He has. He has just recently, yes.
And what is that all about?
Well, you know, the two or three proposals that are actually out on paper right now, our senators have both said that they're opposed to. Lindsey has said that he's opposed to the two that are on paper right now, as has Senator DeMint. And what I think Lindsey came under, or Senator Graham came under fire for, was signing on to a piece that ran in a paper up north that said that we need to look at energy independence, and we need to look at sustainable resources and some of those things in this context. And I think that's kind of what he's gotten some heat for.
Well, you know, I think we formed a government agency up there about 28 years ago.
Yes.
That was supposed to be creating energy independence.
Right.
And the only thing that I see is that, you know, all during the campaign, we heard about energy independence. I remember when gas was over at the pump, over $4, almost $5 a gallon here in South Carolina.
Sure.
But now there has been no offshore drilling. We haven't made the moves. It's like we've relaxed.
Well, I think that the administration in power in Washington in particular is going to move glacially slow on some of this, because quite frankly a lot of their constituencies wouldn't be supportive of some of the things that could could make this attractive to some people. You know, for instance, some of the conversations are about energy independence involve nuclear or offshore drilling, and the administration in Washington has constituencies that are vehemently opposed to both. So that makes it very hard for there to be any negotiation.
And the other thing, what happened to wind power? What, did that just go out the window? I mean, we kind of lost that one, didn't we? I thought that was a big one that was on the table.
It was one of the ones that were part of the conversation about renewable sources, and in that context of independence. The two that I think are causing the most heartburn for folks that feel like we need to go forward on this are the nuclear and the offshore, because the traditional constituencies that are opposed to that are still opposed to it, whereas wind power is not one where there's a lot of opposition.
Right. Well, anyways, so what is this going to mean? If they get this passed, what is it going to mean to small business and to the individual? We hear all these prices being battered out there, $1,000, $1,200, mm-hmm. $700. What's it going to mean to our energy bills that I think we pay a lot as it is?
Well, you know, our estimates, you know, what NFIB has in terms of estimates come from some pretty smart folks up in Washington and in other places. And all indicators are that here in South Carolina, we could be looking at, you know, we could be looking at several hundreds of dollars into thousands of dollars increase in tax if cap and trade in form of the Waxman bill, which is one of the bills that was being proposed, was to pass. The original Kerry proposal would have the same sort of implications. You know, you're looking at, you know, $1,200, $1,400 in increased taxes and 50, 60 cents more per gallon of gasoline under those proposals if nothing changes. And those are game changers for Main Street.
Well, is there something that could be done that wouldn't be this hard on everybody?
You know, and I think that's where Senator Graham was trying to head. But I think that there's a lot of folks who are a little skeptical about what the end result of those conversations is going to be.
Okay, so do you think there is another direction we can go?
I think the goals of, you know, energy independence of allowing for more nuclear and offshore drilling are all important, but I think that it makes it tough as an organization to be supportive of those objectives when we know that coming hand in hand with those you're looking at dramatic potential tax increases and costs being passed on to your business from other businesses and that you'll have to pass on to your consumers.
Are we going in the right direction? I mean, it seems like, you know, that, you know, costs came down here when we first went into this recession. And now I keep seeing things and they're inching up, up, up. And you talk about this. We talk about health care. They're talking about taxing on health care. We're talking on taxing on cap and trade. Where are we going to end up? Are we going to become less of a nation?
Well, I'd like to believe not. I mean, I have a great deal of faith in Main Street. And in my members,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the 5,000 businesses here in South Carolina would like nothing that we represent would like nothing better than to grow, and to hire more, and to expand, and to provide
make product. Some money.
Right, all those things, and all those things happen at the same time.
Right.
You know, we just have to go ahead and do what we can to draw the line in Washington, and to do what we can, knowing that this administration may not necessarily be terribly supportive of some of the things we're looking for there, and do what we can at the State House to move some things that might help us with those businesses.
But what is the support that you have at the state level for this?
We've got very good support at the State House.
Okay.
There's a NFIB's got a great reputation at the State House. That comes from the hard work of a lot of my predecessors going over there and promoting and our members being very active with their legislators. That helps a lot. One of the great things about NFIB and one of the reasons I'm proud to represent NFIB at the State House is the fact that when I go to sit down with a House member or a senator and say I represent NFIB,
he doesn't send you out the door?
I don't get thrown out nearly as much as I did with some other folks.
Good to hear.
Yes. And they know NFIB members back in their districts. I mean, they know Main Street back in their districts, and that makes makes it a whole lot easier to talk about what we're talking about, and we're working on some things at the state level that I think that can be very helpful for us, and productive, and will help us, at minimum, mitigate some of the damage that could be coming down from Pennsylvania Avenue to Main Street.
All right, hey, don't you go away. I'm Ann Eller. I'm here with J.J. Darby. We'll be back in just a second.
It's the big event at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You know what we want. Diamonds. Engagement ring.
Pendants.
Earrings.
We want it all!
Sharp Facets Galleries has it all at rock bottom prices.
It's the big event at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We've had a real interesting conversation here today. I sure hope we've piqued your interest. And, you know, one of the things, NFIB, they have a website if you're interested in joining or finding out more information. What do they do, JJ?
Absolutely. NFIB.com. NFIB.com.
Boy, that was too simple.
Wasn't it? Very easy to get to.
It's
a great website, and you can drill down on the site to what we're doing here at the state level as well.
Okay, so check that out, NFIB.com. They have a lot going on. They are in our court. And if anything is going to help our country grow, it is small business. And it really, it hurts my heart sometimes to see the lack of compassion. I'm going to use compassion for small businesses. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me is that it's like on the credit thing. You know, we go back. Is it the people's fault? The people's fault that borrowed the money based on the banks loaning it and putting it out there to be done. You know, we're in a situation where instead of losing all of our business and credit and this type of thing, I think we should be trying to figure out how we can help and make it come together so that these people can survive, because these are the people that have worked their butts off
right.
to make things happen in our country.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You know, there's the unintended consequences of some of the fallout are that credit is tightening, particularly towards, or has tightened, particularly in the area of small business and development for small business. What we've done here in South Carolina is we've reached out to folks that we know that can help guide our businesses to get access to some of that capital. And so we're working with the small business experts over at the State Chamber, at the Department of Commerce, and some of the other folks to kind of make sure that our members have what they need, or at least have access to what maybe it'll help them to weather what they're going through right now.
That's right. Because I don't think, since we haven't really addressed the jobs issue, I don't see that the government has really addressed jobs. We've talked, but we haven't addressed it. And yesterday, I think it was, all the figures came out and everything looked so good and rosy. And then, of course, we had to hear, but jobs will lag behind.
Right, of course.
And, of course, when people are wondering what's going to happen with health care, I don't think many businesses, I think as far as they can keep workers working, they're going to keep workers working at an over pace in order to make it happen.
Sure. I mean, you know, my members, you know, again, we've about 5,000 members here. And my members want to keep their doors open and want to keep the families that they've brought on and the employees that they've hired working. But when you see some of these policies coming down from Washington that are just going to cost them just too much to keep doing that, it makes it hard. And there's a lot of things coming down from Washington that could have a dramatic impact. And so what we do here in South Carolina is try to do what we can to
hold the line.
Hold the line.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Speaking of holding the line, what about the workers' rights?
Workers' rights.
Yes.
This card check,
the unions. What is all this about?
Well, there's a proposal in Washington. Ironically, it's called the Employee Free Choice Act.
Means like the employee free choice. Okay.
You're right. That's what it's called.
Right.
We actually call it the Employee Forced Choice Act.
Okay.
We're opposed to it. The business community.
You mean
as a
you
whole
don't want employees
to
have free choice?
Well, it sounds.
What's going on here?
Well, it sounds a whole lot better than it really is. Really, what it does is it actually allows for unions to come into a place of business and makes it that much easier for them to go ahead and form within, you know, any size business.
So two or three people can form a union?
Sure, absolutely. You know, the argument would be that the union organizers, those folks would probably target the ones that are maybe a little bit larger than that at the onset, but that the law doesn't determine which ones they can or can't go after, so they could go to just about any level.
Well, you know, we know about unions, of course. The car, the auto industry, that's been unionized.
They've done a great job in Detroit, haven't they?
Yeah, they sure have. And then, of course, South Carolina, North Carolina. We, for years, had all our big mills and everything, and I don't believe any of those ever organized, did they? They didn't have unions.
Very few. There have been, since I believe it was 2001, there's been under a dozen union votes in businesses here in South Carolina, I believe is the number that I heard, of which just under half decided to go ahead and form a union under secret ballot voting, and a little bit over half decided not to. And that, I think, is a testament to the fact that current system, that right to a secret ballot, actually works. And that's what the unions are attempting in Washington to throw out and go with a more expedited, much more stacked in their favor plan to make it a whole lot easier for them to form unions.
Well, it seems like the unions are getting a lot of payback here. Seems that way.
They have a sympathetic ear at 1600 Pennsylvania. Absolutely.
That's right. And, you know, the thing about unions is they're very similar to our government, is they like us to believe that they'll take care of us.
Right. Right.
You know, I think that's the big thing about a union. You don't have to worry. If you get fired, we'll be there. If this happens, this happens. Well, that's all in good. But what about making people have a public, everybody knows how you voted?
Well, you know, I'm an old campaign guy by trade before I started lobbying, and I fundamentally believe in the right to a secret ballot. I think that when I go to vote for President of the United States or Congress or State House or State Senate, that I have a right to that secret ballot. I don't think that in a situation where something as important as a determination of union representation at a business is being discussed, that should be any different. I think that right to a secret ballot at that particular time is just as important for the employee and the employer.
So we should keep our secret ballots.
Absolutely. And that's what we're fighting for at the State House. We're working on a few pieces of legislation over there that would actually say that if Washington wanted to go ahead and pass this so-called Free Choice Act, that we would draw the line here in South Carolina and that we would defend the right to a secret ballot for union votes here in South Carolina.
Hmm. We tried that with the stimulus package.
Well, we did try and draw the line on that. But, you know, I think the argument here is that this is a dramatically different pieces of law and different pieces of legislation. And so I think that there's some opportunity here. I'd certainly be happy, and I think there would be a lot of folks who would be happy to go ahead and let South Carolina be the test case for this and say no to unions.
Say no to unions. Does that mean we shouldn't have unions in South Carolina?
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, what I'm saying is that I think that when it comes time to determine whether or not a union should be formed in a shop, that those employees should have the opportunity to take that vote free from intimidation, free from any sort of coercion or pressure. And the card check system that they're trying to promote in Washington absolutely stacks it in favor of the unions, makes it that much easier for folks, and lowers, in fact, the threshold of the number of people that you actually need to vote for it. And then it speeds up the process. And if, in fact, you vote for a union under this process and it passes, and the employer disagrees with what the bargaining agreement's going to be, a bureaucrat in Washington's going to make a determination on what your union shop's going to look like after that. And those are things Main Street can't afford that.
We certainly can't. And I think it is absolutely correct that we're able to have private voting. What's going to happen next? Well, I mean, if that passed, where would we go? Would we all have to raise our hands and say who we're voting for president?
You've got to scratch your head once in a while about some of the things they're putting up there.
That's true.
But we're working hard on this one here at the State House. So.
Well, we have unions here in South Carolina. It's just a question of whether it would be an open and let them in your doors that much easier. I think a lot of people don't realize how much it actually costs to belong to a union.
That's right. That's right. There's a significant cost to the members as well, and people don't recognize or understand in a lot of cases that a lot of that money is actually used for activities that really have nothing to do with protecting their jobs or their benefits.
That's right. It goes to state and national levels, doesn't it?
It can.
Yeah, it sure can. So if you're talking to a union, make sure you ask the right questions if you're thinking about that. But you know what? I've always found that sitting down and talking directly to somebody, just like we're sitting here today, is one of the best ways to solve issues.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the instance of you know, my small businesses, their employees and their employers have a dialogue. You know, small businesses are families in a lot of cases. You know, those employees and employers have grown together and grown the business together. And what you're looking at in a situation like card check, unless we can pass this legislation here in South Carolina, is dramatically upsetting that relationship. To the detriment of not just the business, but the employees too, who lose that ability to sit down and talk to their boss about things that are bothering them.
That's right. I agree with that. And, you know, but one of the things that kind of bothers me is, as we see our young people coming up, you know, they are not as communicative as far as, you know, they like emails. They like this distance. Mm-hmm. They don't like that closeness that I think a family business quite often has.
It does. There's a very unique. I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with a lot of my members and a lot of businesses across the state this last year, and there's a fondness and a friendship that you see with a lot of my business owners with their employees that may not necessarily be the same in other settings, and that's something that I'm proud of on behalf of NFIB.
That's right. Well, listen, JJ, we don't have much time left. Is there anything you would like to get out there? You know, we've talked about cap and trade. We've talked about health care. We've just been able to cover really just the top of some of these issues. We'll have to have you back again to talk again.
I'd love to. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And if anybody's got any questions, I'd direct them back to that website. It's nfib.com.
That's right. And if they'd like to get in touch with you, what do they do?
They can reach me. We have an office in Columbia, and you can reach me at jj.darby@nfib.org.
That's great. So, and do you have a telephone number, though? A lot of our listeners don't like that email thing, JJ.
I do. 803-467-4784.
Okay. Tell them that number again.
803-467-4784 is how you reach me directly.
All right. Well, listen, it has been great having you here. I've gotten some questions answered. Actually, I think sometimes the more questions you have answered, the more questions you have about things
right.
coming up. What's for you next? What are you going to be working hard on next?
We're getting ready for session. We've got a number of big ticket items coming down. This card check bill is very important for us. There's some conversations about doing something with the situation at the Employment Security Commission, taking a look at how that situation is going to unfold.
We don't have any money there, do we?
Well, we have borrowed a little bit of money from the federal government to pay some benefits, and I think we need to take a look at how that system's working. Just doing what we can to go ahead and make sure that folks on Main Street can continue to employ folks and continue to expand their businesses as best we can here in South Carolina.
That's right. Keep those taxes down and open up some credit. That's what I say. Give the people what they need to make it happen. And you know what? Our people would take care of our government if the government would let us take care of everything.
Absolutely.
All right, JJ, thanks so much for being here today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
All right, this is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio. Bye-bye, Andy.
Bye-bye, Ann.